heart-centered emotions about greater humanity and divinity. Incoherence is brought on by stress, which is the body and mind's response to disruptions and upsets in our external environment. If the parasympathetic nervous system functions best when we feel safe, then the sympathetic nervous system is activated mostly when we feel unsafe. The stress we experience when we feel unsafe is not necessarily about the event itself, but the result of unmanaged emotional reactions to the event. In a state of homeostasis, you can think of the body as a sophisticated, finely tuned machine. But when emotions such as resentment, anger, jealousy, impatience, and frustration persist, our internal equilibrium is thrown out of balance. If you think about a time recently when you felt stress, it probably felt somewhat like a fragmented rhythm. As it turns out, this is exactly what the heart is doing, beating in a fragmented rhythm. In a state of chronic stress, the body struggles to maintain homeostasis, and we may begin to suffer from myriad stress-related symptoms. This constant stress draws from the invisible energy field around our body and depletes our vital life force, leaving little time or energy for repair and restoration. As a result of the body's reliance on the stress hormones, now we're caught in an addictive loop where incoherence and chaos start to feel normal. But at what cost? The long-term effects of stress can be catastrophic. According to one Mayo Clinic study of people with heart disease, psychological stress was the strongest predictor of future cardiac events, including cardiac death, cardiac arrest, and heart attack. Many people, because they live in states of chronic stress, don't even realize they are living under stress until an event, such as a heart attack, occurs. It makes sense, then, that if the heart is beating incoherently for extended periods of time, not working in balance and order, sooner or later it is going to fail. Key to our ability to manage stress is what's known as resilience, which HMI defines as the capacity to prepare for, recover from, and adapt in the face of stress, adversity, trauma, or challenge. Resilience and the management of emotions are both integral to many important physiological processes involved in energy regulation, how fast the body bounces back after the stress response, and our ability to maintain health and homeostasis. HRV, communication between the heart and brain. We've been led to believe that the brain reigns over our biology. While this is partly true, the heart is an autorhythmic organ, which means the heartbeat is self-initiated from within the heart, not from the brain. For example, it's a known fact that in all kinds of species, the heart can be removed from the body and placed in a salt solution called Ringer's solution, where it will continue to beat for extended periods of time, independent of any neurological connection to the brain. In a fetus, the heart begins beating before the brain is even formed, at about 3 weeks, while the electrical activity of its brain doesn't even begin until around the 5th or 6th week. This demonstrates that the heart is capable of initiating communication with the central nervous system. Another factor that makes the heart unique is that it contains nerves from both branches of the ANS, which means any and every change in both the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous systems affect the way the heart works on a beat-to-beat basis. This is important because whether we are conscious of it or not, every emotion we experience influences our heart rhythm, which gets communicated directly through the central nervous system. In this way, the heart, the limbic brain, and the ANS have a very intimate relationship because balance or imbalance in one affects the other. As a side note, the limbic brain, the seat of the autonomic nervous system, is also called the emotional brain. So when you change your emotions, you affect your autonomic functions. Today, with about 75% accuracy, Science can predict what someone is feeling just by looking at the beat-to-beat activity of the heart using heart rate variability analysis. HRV, heart rate variability, is a physiological phenomenon that measures environmental and psychological challenges as reflected by the variation of the heart's beat-to-beat intervals. Thus the term variability. Among its uses, HRV can measure the flexibility of our heart and nervous system, which reflects our health and fitness, as well as how well we are balancing our mental and emotional lives. By studying the heart's rhythms as measured by HRV, scientists can detect patterns that deepen our understanding of how humans process emotions and the effects of feelings and emotions on our well-being. In this way, continued HRV research offers us a unique window into the communication between the heart, brain, and emotions. Many studies show that having a moderate level of variability makes us better able to adapt to life's challenges. But a low level of heart rate variability is a strong and independent predictor of future health problems, including all causes of mortality. Low HRV is also associated with numerous medical conditions. When we are young, we have greater variability, but as we age, our variability decreases. HRV patterns are so consistent that when scientists look at an HRV reading, they can generally estimate the subject's age within approximately 2 years. For many years, a steady heart rhythm was considered a sign of good health. But now we know that our heart rhythm changes with each and every heartbeat, even when we are sleeping. Over the years, HMI researchers have discovered information encoded within these beat-to-beat intervals by looking at the spaces between heartbeats in HRV readings, rather than the spikes related to the beats themselves. This is somewhat similar to Morse code, where we understand communications by the intervals between transmissions. In the case of our heart, the intervals between its beats are complex transmissions used to relay communications between the brain and body. During the 1990s, researchers at HMI discovered that when people focused on their hearts and evoked elevated emotions such as appreciation, joy, gratitude, and compassion, those feelings could be observed as coherent patterns in the heart's rhythms. The opposite was true of stressful feelings, which caused the heart rhythms to be incoherent and to appear jagged and irregular. This discovery linked emotional states to HRV patterns. See figure 7.1. The researchers also observed that heart rate, beats per minute, and heart rhythm were two separate biological responses. For instance, a person could have a high heart rate and still maintain a state of coherence. Therefore, it was determined that the heart's rhythms can create coherent internal body states. When our HRV is in a heart-coherent pattern, it reflects increased synchronization and harmony within the two branches of the ANS, as well as in the activity occurring in our higher-level brain centers. So much of what we've learned from Western medicine has caused us to believe that we cannot control our body's autonomic nervous system, like heart rate and blood pressure, because such functions are beyond the domain of the conscious mind, not to mention the separation between the voluntary and involuntary nervous systems. We now know, however, that you don't have to be a yogi or a mystic to be able to master such skills. You just have to be supernatural, which can be learned. This is one reason why HMI teaches the importance of heart coherence not only to individuals, but also to the military, law enforcement, schools, athletes, and other high-functioning individuals, so people can maintain clarity, decision-making ability, and composure in high-stress situations. The benefits of heart coherence. When we choose to cultivate and experience elevated emotions, and the coherent signal of those elevated emotions reaches the brain. If the amplitude of the signal is high enough, chemicals equal to those feelings and emotions are released into the body. We call this a feeling, and positive feelings like this make us feel lighter and freer. In other words, the energy of your whole state of being is elevated. If you are feeling an elevated sense of well-being in a safe environment, the energy of those feelings sets in motion a cascade of at least 1,400 biochemical changes in the body that promote growth and repair. Instead of drawing from the invisible field of energy around your body to transform energy into chemistry, now you're adding to and expanding that field, resulting in a new expression of chemistry reflective of the change in energy. How? If the first three energy centers of the body are energy consumers when we are out of balance, the heart is an energy expander. And when you rest your attention in your heart to create and sustain elevated emotions, that coherent energy causes your heart to beat like a drum. It's that coherent, rhythmic beating that creates a measurable magnetic field around your heart and thus your body. Just like the focused beat of a drum that produces a measurable sound wave, the stronger the coherent rhythm of the heart, the more expanded your field becomes. When you are feeling hurt, anger, stress, jealousy, rage, competition, or frustration, on the other hand, the signal from the heart to the brain becomes incoherent, and this triggers the release of approximately 1,200 chemicals into the body, equal to those feelings. This chemical dump lasts approximately 90 seconds to 2 minutes. In the short term, these stressful feelings are not harmful. In fact, if they're resolved, they improve your resilience. However, the long-term effects of unresolved survival emotions put the entire body into a state of incoherence, making you vulnerable to stress-related health challenges. These survival emotions draw from the field around your body, causing you to feel separate and materialistic because you are putting most of your focus and attention on matter, your body, the environment, time, and of course, the source of your problems. Amongst HMI's most significant findings is that what we feel on a minute-to-minute, second-to-second basis influences the heart, and that our feelings and emotions are a key aspect of unlocking heart intelligence. Because feelings and emotions are energies that emit powerful magnetic fields, the stronger the elevated feelings, the stronger the magnetic field. In fact, the heart produces the strongest magnetic field in the body, 5,000 times greater in strength than the field produced by the brain. Place your finger on your wrist and feel your pulse. That pulse is a wave of energy called the blood pressure wave, and it travels through your entire body, influencing everything, including brain function. Not only does the heart's magnetic pulse reverberate through every cell of the body, but it also produces a field around your body that can be measured up to 8 to 10 feet away using a sensitive detector called a magnetometer. When you activate the heart by calling up elevated emotions, you are not only broadcasting that energy to every cell, you are also radiating those feelings out into space. This is where the heart moves beyond biology and into physics. Using electroencephalograms, scientists at the HMI laboratory discovered that when the heart goes into coherence, the brain waves entrain with the heart's rhythm at a frequency of 0.10 Hz, and also that the synchronization between heart and brain is increased when the subject is in a heart-coherent state. The coherent frequency of 0.10 Hz has been shown to be a state of optimum performance associated with increased access to our deeper intuition and internal guidance. Once the analytical mind is out of the way, the individual can move down the ladder of consciousness from alpha to theta to delta brainwaves, the state in which restorative functions in the body take place. Coincidentally, we often see our students reporting profound or mystical experiences in deep delta around 0.09 to 0.10 hertz. 0.09 hertz is just a hundredth of a cycle of a second of reported optimal coherence. While their hearts are in a very coherent state, however, the amplitude of energy produced by the heart increases the level of energy in the brain, in some cases more than 50 to 300 times the normal level or more. Supporting evidence of heart-brain coherence was further demonstrated by a series of experiments performed by Gary Schwartz, PhD, and his colleagues at the University of Arizona. In their experiments, they found inexplicable communications between the heart and the brain that made no sense via neurological or other established communication pathways. This discovery established the fact that energetic interactions between the heart and the brain exist through electromagnetic fields. Both examples point to the fact that when we focus our attention on our heart and emotions, the heart's beating acts as an amplifier. This increases the synchronization between our heart and brain and creates coherence, not only in the physical organs, but also in the electromagnetic field surrounding our body. Also noteworthy is that right behind the breastbone sits a small gland called the thymus, which has an intimate connection with the heart center. As one of the main organs of the immune system, the thymus serves a vital role in the promotion of T cells, which defend the body from pathogens such as bacteria and viruses. The thymus gland functions optimally up to the onset of puberty, but it begins to shrink as we get older because of natural decreases in the production of human growth hormone. As with many vital organs, the thymus is also prone to the negative effects of long-term stress. When we're living in emergency mode for extended periods of time and diminish our vital energy field, all of our energy is directed outward to protect us from external threats, leaving little energy to protect us from internal threats. Eventually, this leads to dysfunction of the immune system. Makes sense then that as the heart center becomes activated with energy, by mobilizing the parasympathetic nervous system for growth and repair, the thymus gland should become more active as well, because now we're adding energy in that gland. Therefore, the thymus gland should also benefit from the practice of sustaining coherence within the body, aiding in the support of the overall vitality of our immune system and long-term health. You learned earlier in this book that in my own independent studies, when our students were able to feel and sustain gratitude and other elevated emotions for a total of 15 to 20 minutes per day for 4 days, the energy of the emotion signaled the immune cell genes to make a protein called immunoglobulin A. The significant increase in IgA is a perfect example of one of the many positive cascading effects of heart coherence. What all this boils down to is that the quality of our heart's rhythm has consequences for our overall health. If the heart beats in harmonious rhythms, its efficiency reduces stress on other systems of the body, maximizes our energy, and creates states whereby we thrive mentally, emotionally, and physically. If there is disharmony in our heart rhythms, the opposite is true. This incoherence leaves us with less energy available for healing and for maintaining health and long-term building projects, creating unrest within our internal states and putting increased stress on the heart and other organs. Heart attacks and heart disease, for example, occur when the body has been under stress for extended periods of time. When we intentionally choose elevated emotions, however, focusing less on disharmony and more on gratitude, our bodies respond positively, and we enjoy improved health. The next time you use an elevated emotion to tune into your future and embrace those feelings before the event unfolds, and feel gratitude that the event has already occurred, just know that the worst thing that probably can happen to you is that you begin to heal. The effects of chronic stress. When we live in a constant state of stress, our heart center becomes incoherent, and this stifles our ability to create. In response to chaotic heart rhythms, the brain becomes very disintegrated and incoherent, and that incoherence is reflected in the two branches of the ANS. If the parasympathetic system is the brake and the sympathetic system is the accelerator, when they are working in opposition, your body is receiving a message akin to stepping on the gas while your foot is on the brake. Doesn't take a significant amount of automotive knowledge to understand the ramifications of these opposing forces. We wear out the brakes and we put stress on the drivetrain, while the resistance wastes energy and reduces fuel efficiency. Eventually, this habituation of stress wears down the body so much that it eliminates our ability to repair and maintain health, depleting our vitality and resilience. If resilience is based on efficient energy management, you may feel completely drained, out of sorts, and perhaps sick while under the influence of chronic stress. The more addicted we become to these states of stress, the less likely we are to open our hearts, go within, and consciously create heart coherence. An experience I had at my home in a rural area of Washington State serves as a good example. One November evening, I came home from work, parked my car as I always did, and began walking down the 40-yard path to my house. It was pitch black. About 30 yards from my front door, off to my right, I heard an ominous growl coming from behind some very large rocks. Immediately, I narrowed my focus on matter, something, and found myself thinking, what could be lurking in the darkness? I began searching in my mind and then my environment for knowns from my past memory bank in order to predict my future. Could it be one of my dogs? I wondered. I started calling out their names, but there was no response. As I took a few more steps, the growling became louder. Without my having to think about mobilizing the energy in my body, the hair on the back of my neck stood up. My heart rate and respiratory rate increased, and my senses became heightened in preparation for fight or flight. I took out my cell phone and turned on the flashlight to narrow my focus on the possible threat, but I still couldn't see what was making the noise. From the darkness, the growling continued. I slowly backed up and finally fled to my barn, where my ranch hands were putting away the horses for the night. We grabbed our guns and flashlights and returned to the scene just in time to see a cougar and her cub scurrying away through the bushes. You can probably gather from this story that a highly stressful situation like this is not the time to open your heart or trust in the unknown. It's not a time to take your attention off things in your outer material world to focus on a new possibility in your mind. It's a time to run, hide, or fight. But if you are perpetually hooked into the fight-or-flight state, even if there is no cougar in the bushes, you will be less likely to want to close your eyes and go within because you have to keep your attention on the perceived threat outside of you. No new information can enter your nervous system that is not equal to or relevant to the emotions you are experiencing. So you can't program your body for a new destiny. So it makes sense that the more you live addicted to the stress hormones in your normal life, the less likely you are to want to create, meditate, or open your heart and be vulnerable. The heart-brain. In 1991, the pioneering work of J. Andrew R. Moore, MD, PhD, showed that the heart literally has a mind of its own. With as many as 40,000 neurons, the heart has a nervous system that functions independently of the brain. The technical term coined for this system is the intrinsic cardiac nervous system, more commonly known as the heart brain. This discovery was so monumental that it led to a new field of science called neurocardiology. The heart and the brain are connected by efferent, descending, and afferent, ascending pathways. However, 90% of the connecting nerve fibers ascend from the heart up to the brain. Armour uncovered that these direct, afferent neural pathways continuously send signals and information that interacts with and modifies activity in the brain's higher cognitive and emotional centers. These signals from the heart to the brain connect through the vagus nerve and continue straight to the thalamus, which synchronizes cortical activity such as thinking, perceiving, and understanding language, then to the frontal lobes, responsible for motor functions and problem solving, and onto the brain's survival center, the amygdala, which signals emotional memory. The core cells of the amygdala even synchronize to the heart's beating. See figure 7.2. This means that if your heart center is open, it's keeping your brain's survival centers in check. It's possible then that the more heart-centered you are, the less likely you will react to stresses in your life. The reverse is also true. The less energy you have in your heart center, the more likely you'll be living in survival mode. This tells us that our feelings and heart rhythms affect what emotional memories and responses transpire in us. So stress and anxiety can trigger brainwave patterns to match an anxiety habit of the past. Conversely, just like a computer that matches patterns, elevated emotions of the heart can produce coherence in brainwave patterns. So if you're summoning the feelings of your future by creating elevated states, your brain is beginning to lay the neural networks for those future emotions or that new destiny. Armour's discovery of the afferent neural pathways from the heart to the brain proves that the heart independently processes emotions, responds directly to the environment, and regulates its rhythms without receiving information from the brain. That's because the heart and the ANS always work together. Also noteworthy is that the nerves facilitating this communication enable the heart to sense, remember, self-regulate, and make decisions about cardiac control, independent of the nervous system. To put it simply, emotions and feelings originating in the heart play an important role in the way we think, process information, feel, and understand the world and our place in it. Once the heart center is activated, it acts as an amplifier to jumpstart the brain, enhance its activity, and create balance, order, and coherence throughout the body. Living heart-centered. As I said earlier, every thought you think produces corresponding chemistry equal to that thought, which in turn creates an emotion. Therefore, you are suggestible only to the thoughts equal to your emotional state. We now know that when our students are heart-centered and feel more wholeness and oneness, they're less separate from their dreams. When they feel gratitude, abundance, freedom, or love, all those emotions welcome corresponding thoughts. Those heart-centered emotions open the door to the subconscious mind so that you can program your autonomic nervous system equal to the thoughts of your new future. We also know that if they live in the feeling of fear or lack, but try to think they're abundant, they can't produce a measurable effect, because change can only happen when thoughts are in alignment with the emotional state of the body. They can think positively all they want, but without a corresponding feeling or emotion equal to that thought, the message cannot be felt or understood throughout the rest of the body. So you could repeat the affirmation, "I am fearless," until you're blue in the face. But if it's fear you're actually feeling, the thought, "I am fearless," never makes it past the brainstem, which means you're not signaling the body and ANS into a new specific destiny. The feeling is what produces the emotional charge, energy, to stimulate your ANS into a different destiny. Without the feeling, a disconnect remains between your brain and body, between the thought of health and the feeling of health, and you can't embody that new state of being. It's only when you change your energy that you can produce more consistent effects. If you sustain these elevated emotions on a daily basis, eventually your body, in its innate intelligence, begins to make relative genetic changes in a way I described earlier. That's because the body believes that the emotion you are embracing is coming from an experience in your environment. So when you open your heart center, practice feeling an emotion before the experience occurs and marry it with a clear intention. The body responds as if it's in the future experience. That heart-mind coherence then influences your body chemistry and energy in a series of ways. If coherence between the heart and the brain can originate in the heart, and their synchronization results in optimal performance and health, then you should be taking time every day to focus on activating your heart center. By intentionally choosing to feel the elevated emotions of the heart, rather than waiting for something outside of yourself to elicit those emotions, you become who you are truly meant to be, a heart-empowered individual. When you are living by the heart, you naturally choose love and innately demonstrate it through compassion and care for the well-being of yourself, others, and planet Earth. Through our partnership with HMI, our students have demonstrated that with practice, we can in fact produce, regulate, and sustain elevated feelings and emotions, independent of events in our external world. In our workshops around the world, through the practice of regulating heart rhythms to sustain elevated emotions, we teach our students how to generate heart and brain coherence. We then measure their abilities using HRV monitors. During guided meditations, we ask our students to surrender to the feelings of gratitude, joy, and love, and we encourage daily practice outside of our formal instruction, because when one chooses to practice sitting in a state of coherence, it becomes a habit. I hope that with enough practice, our students can replace old mental scripts of feeling unworthy, fearful, or insecure with more elevated states of being, and fall deeply in love with their lives. We've seen enough of them demonstrate that it is indeed possible to produce positive, measurable, tangible effects in their lives simply by shifting the paradigm of their thoughts and feelings. These dedicated individuals return to their homes where the positive effects they've produced in their own lives ripple out to positively affect their families and communities, continuously expanding their vibrational influence of harmony and coherence throughout the world. By repeatedly practicing the regulation of heightened emotional states, in time the constant feeling of elevated emotions creates a new emotional baseline. This baseline then begins to continuously influence a new set of thoughts equal to the heightened feelings. The summation of those novel thoughts creates a new level of mind, which then produces more corresponding emotions equal to those thoughts, further sustaining that baseline. When this feedback loop between the heart, body, and mind, brain, occurs, you are in an entirely new state of being. The consciousness of the unlimited mind and the energy of profound love and gratitude. The repetition of this process is what it means to recondition your body, rewire your brain, and reconfigure your biology equal to your new state of being. Now you are naturally, automatically, and regularly broadcasting a different electromagnetic signature of energy into the field. This is who you are, or who you have become. Countless history books could be written through the lens of incoherent emotions. Whether the result is a Shakespearean tragedy, genocide, or a world war, survival emotions such as blame, hate, rage, competition, and retribution have resulted in an endless, unnecessary trail of pain, suffering, oppression, and death. The results have caused humans to live in opposition and conflict rather than in peace and harmony. This is a time in history when we can break that cycle. This is a pivotal moment in the story of humanity where ancient wisdom and modern science are intersecting to provide us with the technology and scientific understanding to learn not only how to more efficiently and effectively manage our emotions, but also what that means for our health, relationships, energy levels, and personal and collective evolution. It doesn't require moving mountains, only changing our internal state of being. This allows us to alter the way we act with one another, replacing stressful situations with positive experiences that give us energy, fill our spirit, and leave us with a sense of wholeness, connection, and unity. The brain may think, but when you turn your heart into an instrument of perception, it knows. Examples from our workshops. To see an example of how heart coherence creates brain coherence, take a look at graphics 8A and 8B in the color insert. The first image shows relatively low normal beta brainwave patterns before the person begins to create heart coherence. The second image shows a significant change once the person moves into sustained heart coherence, just a few seconds later. That's because the heart acts as an amplifier to influence the brain to create very coherent, synchronized alpha brainwaves. In figures 7.3A and 7.3B, you will see an HRV analysis from one of our students taken at an advanced workshop. She's having a pretty amazing day. The first chart in figure 7.3A represents two meditations, one in the morning and one right before lunch, and each block represents 5 minutes of elapsed time. Where you see the first gray arrow on the top of the scan pointing down to the right is when she went into and sustained heart coherence. During our 7 a.m. meditation, she maintained this state for more than 50 minutes, until you see the second arrow pointing down to the left. At the bottom of the scan, where you can see the second gray arrow pointing down to the right, is when she again went into heart coherence for 38 minutes, during a meditation just before lunch, ending with the second gray arrow pointing down to the left. You can see she is developing the skill. Now look at figure 7.3B. In the next meditation, later that afternoon, if you glance between the two gray arrows at the top of the figure, you can see that she goes into heart coherence again for almost 45 minutes. What makes this reading so fascinating, however, is what happens later that evening around 8 p.m. See the second set of gray arrows pointing inward. Since there was no meditation taking place at the time, we asked her later what she had experienced. Her heart went into super coherence for more than an hour while she was in her normal level of wakefulness. She told us she'd been getting ready for bed when suddenly she felt an overwhelming feeling of love. It was so strong that she had to lie down and surrender to it. Her heart spontaneously went into heart coherence, and for an hour and 10 minutes, while she lay on her bed, she fell deeply in love with her life. She sustained a change in her ANS. Where you see the last arrow is where she said she rolled over on her side and fell asleep. Not a bad way to end a day, wouldn't you agree? So ponder this. You know how easy it is to think a fearful, anxious thought about a future event that hasn't happened, and in your mind emotionally embrace this fictional outcome over and over. And you know how the more energy you feed the thought, the more you ruminate over other possible outcomes, and eventually those thoughts deliver you to a worst-case scenario. It's the emotions that are driving those thoughts. You've conditioned your body to be the mind in fear and anxiety. If this continues over a long period of time, your body may have a panic attack, an autonomic, spontaneous bodily function that your conscious mind can't control. But what if, instead of conditioning the body to the mind of fear and anxiety, you experienced sustained, elevated emotions and conditioned your body to the mind of love and coherence? Instead of being afraid and dreading that a panic attack is going to happen again, you'd get excited and look forward to the prospect of having an autonomic love attack. Figure 7.4 shows three more examples of students who are able to sustain heart coherence for extended periods of time. If you look closely, you'll see their hearts are all responding to a consistent state of elevated emotions for at least 45 minutes. That is, their bodies are responding to a new mind. I'd say that's pretty supernatural. Figures 7.5a and 7.5b demonstrate two examples of people with very poor heart rate variability, noted with two sets of black arrows pointing upward, in the natural waking state. Take a look at the changes in heart rate variability when they practice heart coherence, shown in the area between the gray arrows pointing inward. Even if it's only for 8 to 15 minutes, these students are changing their biology. Heart coherence meditation. This meditation is based on the heart lock-in technique developed by HMI. Close your eyes. Allow your body to relax and bring your attention to your heart. Start breathing in and out from the heart center and continue to do this more slowly and deeply. When your mind wanders, keep returning your attention and awareness to your chest, your heart, and your breath. Next, while you rest your attention in your fourth center, bring up some elevated emotions while continuing to breathe in and out of your heart center. Once you feel these heartfelt emotions in your chest area, send that energy out beyond your body and marry it with your intention. Continue to broadcast that energy and intention all around you. Start with 10 minutes and try to extend the time you practice every day. Eventually, when you come to know what it feels like in your body to experience these elevated emotions, you can practice throughout your day with your eyes open. You'll learn more about how to do this in Chapter 9, Walking Meditation. You might even set a reminder on your phone for 4 times a day, and when it goes off, take a minute or two to feel those elevated emotions. Chapter 8, Mind Movies, Kaleidoscope. I had just finished a keynote lecture on a Saturday night in Orlando, Florida. The following morning, while packing my bags in preparation for my afternoon flight home, I turned on the television to catch up on the political situation in the United States. It was in the thick of the 2016 presidential election, and since I had been out of the country traveling and lecturing over the previous 3 weeks, I was curious about what had transpired during my time away. I quickly surfed through the channels to find a news station, set the remote down, and while halfway paying attention to the TV, continued packing. Suddenly, a commercial came on that caught all my attention, and in an instant, I understood why we called television programming. The commercial began with a nighttime exterior shot of a couple's home. As the camera zooms in on the house, the words, "Night 14 with shingles," appears on the screen. When the shot moves to the interior, tender yet foreboding music plays while an elderly man moans in pain at the foot of his bed. His concerned wife enters the room and asks him how he's doing. "It hurts," he replies. In the lower right corner, in a tiny font, almost the same color as the background, are the words, "Actor portrayal." The wife walks over with a look of despair and slowly lifts her husband's shirt, revealing huge red scab lesions covering more than half his lower back. The imagery is shocking, grotesque and horrific, looking like nothing less than a large third-degree burn. In my 31 years of practice, I've examined hundreds of people with shingles and have never seen anything that looks so severe as the manufactured lesions in this commercial. I immediately knew it was designed to evoke a strong emotional response with the viewing audience, because it certainly did in me. Once you see the rash on the man's back, the commercial achieves its goal of commanding your attention. Because the portrayal of the rash is so arresting, it changes the way you were feeling from only a few moments before your present state of watching it. The moment the commercial significantly changes your internal emotional state, it causes you to put more of your attention and awareness on the source of the disruption in your external environment. The stronger the emotion it causes, stimulus, the more you lean in and pay attention, response. This association of stimulus and response, or conditioning, is how long-term or associative memories are created. This process of conditioning begins by pairing a symbol or an image with a change in an emotional state, a combination that opens the doorway between the conscious and subconscious mind. In the case of the shingles commercial, now that they have captured all your attention and begun the programming process, you can't help but naturally wonder what they're about to say next. The commercial continues with a somber male narrator. If you've ever had chicken pox, the shingles virus is already inside of you. As you get older, your immune system weakens and it loses its ability to keep the shingles virus in check. By using emotional branding, this is the first instance where the commercial raises ethical questions by telling the audience that the immune system weakens with age. Next, we see the man in the bathroom looking at himself in the mirror. He looks worried, broken, and defeated. The scene changes to his wife talking on the phone in the kitchen. "I just can't stand seeing him like this," she says. Next, we see the man doubled over on his bed, palm to forehead, wincing in pain. The narrator then makes a direct suggestion, reinforced by the same words appearing on the screen. 1 in 3 people will get shingles in their lifetime. The narrator continues while the same words remain on the screen. The shingles rash can last up to 30 days. The scene cuts to his wife pleading directly into the camera. "I just wish there was something I could do to help." Again, we see the man in pain, and on the screen appear the words, 1 in 5 people with shingles will have long-term nerve pain." These words remain on the screen for the remaining narration, which says, "Some people with shingles will have long-term nerve pain which can last a few months to a few years. Don't wait until someone you love develops shingles. Talk to your doctor or pharmacist about your risk." Let's take a closer look at what this commercial is attempting to do. First, it puts you in an emotional state by changing how you feel. Once it captures your attention, you immediately become more open and suggestible to the information that follows. Now that you're more prone to accept, believe, and surrender to this information without analyzing it, if you're feeling fearful, victimized, vulnerable, worried, shocked, weak, tired, or in pain, you're more susceptible to the information equal to those emotions. You might start wondering if the ailment could happen to you. At various points during the commercial, certain facts appear written on the screen, allowing you to read along. This serves to reinforce the programming. Also, while the thinking brain is focused on reading the copy, the content of the narration slips behind the conscious mind and into the subconscious mind. Like an audio recorder, it records the entire script and creates an internal program. Next, through a direct, literal suggestion, The narrator has instilled fear in you by personally suggesting you already have the shingles virus in your body, and that because of the natural process of aging, your immune system is no longer strong enough to take care of the virus. This turns on your emotional brain, the seat of your autonomic nervous system, allowing it to become programmed. Once the suggestions make it to your autonomic nervous system, it takes the orders without question and gets busy making chemical changes in your body equal to the literal suggestions. In other words, your body is going to subconsciously and automatically be programmed to weaken your immune function. In conclusion, you're at risk, and you'd better not wait until you contract it. The commercial's effect goes even a little further. If you've ever had chickenpox, and after watching this you think your immune system is weak because of your age, you will decide you have an even greater need to prevent getting shingles. So you will be even more motivated to buy the drug. If you happen to be the person who has shingles and you're watching this commercial, when you see that your condition is not as severe as the actor's shingles, you may find yourself thinking, I should take the drug now so that it doesn't get any worse. I don't want to end up like him. If you don't have shingles, at the commercial's end, you may still be left quietly wondering, am I part of the 2/3 of the population that is safe, or am I in the 1/3 of the population that will get the virus? If you think, I hope I'm not part of the 1/3, it means you believe there may be a chance that you're susceptible and vulnerable, leaving you unconsciously thinking that you already have it. You know what I found most absurd about this commercial? They never even mention the drug, which means they don't have to reveal its side effects. Since the commercial has now piqued my curiosity, I stopped packing and looked on the internet for another commercial by the same pharmaceutical company. I wanted to know what drug they were suggesting would alleviate the severity of the actor's exaggerated, manufactured lesions. After a quick search, I found several similar commercials with the same theme and wording, but with slight variations. They all shared one thing in common, however. They were all designed to capture your attention. In the next commercial I watched, a woman is wearing goggles and swimming in a lap pool. Everything is black and white. In a twist on the previous commercial, the narrator, speaking in an authoritative female British accent, is the shingles virus, and the narration is coming from within the woman's head. Impressive, Linda. Age isn't slowing you down, but your immune system weakens as you get older, increasing the risk for me, the shingles virus. I've been lurking inside you since you had chickenpox. I could surface at any time as a painful, blistering rash. The scene then abruptly cuts from black and white to color, and a man lifts his shirt to reveal the worst shingles rash you've ever seen. Again, the grotesque, blistering lesion can't help but attract your attention. As quickly as the scene turns to color, it returns to the swimmer in black and white. The commercial continues in a similar manner and formula as the previous one. First make an arresting statement or show a shocking image to change the viewer's emotional state. Then cause them to be more suggestible to the information via the change in their emotional state. And finally, use auto-suggestion to make them wonder if they already have shingles. This ad also infers that even though you might be healthy, work out and take care of yourself, you can still become a victim of the virus, further suggesting that no one is immune. Again, the words on the screen reinforce the message. 1 in 3 people get me in their lifetime. Linda, will it be you? If you identify with the woman in any manner, the voice is talking directly to you. The tone of the commercial then changes as a new male narrator begins speaking in a confident, light-hearted tone, devoid of worry or concern. In a similar British accent, the voice says, "And that's why Linda got me drug X." The scene remains in black and white except for the woman's bathing suit her swim cap, and the name of the drug, which appears on the screen in large, sophisticated font. Now the drug has been imprinted into your brain at yet another level. Once again, the ad has created an association between your health and safety and the drug that will protect you. The tagline comes on the screen as the narrator reads it aloud, stating that the drug helps to boost your immune system against shingles, to help protect her against you, shingles. At the end of the commercial, the narrator says drug X is used to prevent shingles in adults 50 years and older. The drug is not to be used to treat shingles, and it does not help everyone. Here's the punchline. You should not take the drug if you have a weakened immune system. Whoa, what? Back up. Here's the irony. They just told you that as you age, your immune system weakens and you're at a greater risk for shingles. The drug is supposed to strengthen your immune system, but you shouldn't use it if you have a weakened immune system. Now comes the dilemma. If you still choose to take the drug, you believe the drug to be more powerful than your possibly weakened immune system. The programming worked. What the clever, if not unethical, advertisers understand is that this message is confusing and disorientating to your conscious mind. At the same time, however, they are programming your subconscious mind with the idea that your immune system is weak. You probably already have the virus within you, and chances are high that you'll get shingles, even if you are healthy. In addition, you are told that without the medication, you are likely to suffer, even though there is no guarantee that the shingles will go away easily, and that it still might not work if your immune system is weak. Finally comes the side effects, which are not side effects, but direct effects. A shingles-like rash, redness, pain, itching, swelling, hard lumps, warmth, bruising or swelling at the injection site, and headache. Talk to your doctor if you plan to be around newborns or people who are pregnant or have a weakened immune system, because the vaccine has a weakened version of the chickenpox virus and you could infect them. Wow! I started to wonder what planet I was living on. This type of programming makes you wonder if we really have free will, or if we're all making choices based on what we have been conditioned to believe is the answer, whether that's a certain type of beer, shampoo or conditioner, the latest smartphone, or a pill that may or may not provide relief from the shingles virus you may or may not even have. Most of the time, advertising appeals to lack and separation by reminding you to want what you don't have, desire what you need to fit into a social consciousness, or satiate a feeling of emptiness or loneliness. And of course, in this case, if you're sick or feeling like you're sick, the advertiser has the answer to your symptoms. In one final search, I came across a similar commercial with the same theme. An actor dramatically suffering for 17 days. The shocking exposure of a huge lesion, and words on the screen to influence the viewer's thoughts while reinforcing the same content. Like the other commercials, this one explicitly informs the public that the drug is not used to treat shingles. But at the end of the commercial, the handsome man smiles and declares, "I think I'm going to give it a try." Meanwhile, I'm left wondering why he would give it a try if he already has had shingles for 17 days. Especially if the drug doesn't treat the condition. Now I'm really confused. Years ago, I learned in my training that by definition, hypnosis is a disorientation of the inhibitory processes of the conscious mind, bypassing the analytical mind so that one becomes highly responsive to suggestions and information in the subconscious mind. As the conscious mind is busy and preoccupied trying to figure things out, the subconscious mind takes it all in without discretion. If you can disorient people with information, or in today's world, disinformation, shock, or confusion, You just open the door to programming their subconscious mind. In this chapter, we're going to learn how to do the opposite and positively reprogram the negative programming we've been conditioned to for most of our lives. 3 minds in 1 brain, the conscious, subconscious, and analytical mind. By now you know that when you change your brainwaves from beta to alpha, you slow down your neocortex, the analytical thinking brain. As your brainwaves slow down, you leave the domain of conscious mind and enter the realm of the subconscious mind. We could say then that if you are somewhat conscious and aware but not actively engaged in thought, your consciousness is moving out of the thinking neocortex and entering the midbrain, otherwise known as the subconscious, the home to the autonomic nervous system and the cerebellum. If you've ever witnessed someone completely captivated by a television show, so much so that when you tried to speak to them that they didn't hear you, it's possible that they were experiencing alpha brainwave states, a state highly suggestible to information. Suggestibility is the ability to accept, believe, and surrender to information without analyzing it. In this state, the viewer is so engrossed, so focused on what they're watching, that they appear entranced and motionless. Nothing else exists to them except the object of their attention. If the person doesn't analyze the information they are being exposed to, they are likely to accept, believe, and/or surrender to it because there is no analytical filter. It makes logical sense then that the more suggestible you are, the less analytical you are. The opposite is also true. The more analytical you are, the less suggestible you are to information. Therefore, it is less likely that your brain will be in an alpha brainwave or trance state. Take a look at figure 8.1 to help you understand the relationship between suggestibility, the analytical mind, trance, and brainwaves. What the creators of the commercials I mentioned earlier fully understand is the best way to program a person to take a desired action is to put them in an alpha brainwave state, so that the information presented is not analyzed. When the commercial is repeated or a similar one with the same message is played over and over, sooner or later that program is going to enter the viewer's subconscious. The more we are exposed to the stimulus, in this case the commercial, the more automatic the programmed response becomes. Eventually, when we've unconsciously memorized the stimulus, and the response is automatic, the conscious mind no longer needs to think about or analyze the incoming information. Meanwhile, the subconscious mind maps the information, recording and storing it like a voice or video recording. Once it is mapped in your brain, each time you are exposed to the commercial, it continues to prime the same neural networks, further reinforcing the same program, thought, and belief. Now, not only can information influence your health, but it can also give you the solution to the problem the commercial is actually creating. Other situations that increase suggestibility include shock, trauma, or a strong emotional reaction. For instance, when people are stunned or exposed to emotionally charged situations, it's common that the brain goes into an altered state. As the brain pauses because of a sensory overload, such as a motor vehicle accident, the person enters a suggestible state. In severe cases, the person surrenders to the shock, becomes frozen and numb, and their ability to think becomes impaired. Therefore, when someone is exposed to an aggressive rash and feels sickened by the images, combined with the right music and narration to create an ominous or foreboding mood, the door to the subconscious mind opens, making the person more easily programmable. If you remember, the subconscious mind sits right below the conscious mind. The limbic brain is the home of the subconscious and the autonomic nervous system, which controls all the automatic biological functions that happen on a moment-to-moment basis. Once a thought is programmed, like a servant carrying out their master's orders, the ANS carries out the request of the thought. If you are repeatedly told that your immune system weakens as you age, and that one out of three people who have had chickenpox in their life will get shingles, the emotionally charged experience allows the message to make it past your thinking, analytical mind. In response to this information, your ANS follows the orders and can begin to actually weaken your internal defense system. For the advertisers to really get their money's worth in this commercial endeavor, it's best for them to repeatedly run the commercials late in the evening when we're most suggestible to programming. Why? Because melatonin levels rise in response to darkness, and melatonin causes our brainwaves to slow down in preparation for sleeping and dreaming. Because our brainwaves are moving from beta to alpha to theta to delta in the evening, people are less analytical and their subconscious window opens. As daylight wakes us up in the morning and our brain begins producing serotonin, the reverse process occurs. Our brainwaves go from delta to theta to alpha, where again our subconscious is open to programming, and eventually to beta. So if you're an advertiser and you know the majority of the public is not aware of the way subconscious programming works, why not create a series of late-night commercials with your desired messaging? Accent it with just the right amount of fright and concern so as to capture the viewer's attention and proceed to program their autonomic nervous system to get busy taking the orders just before they fall asleep. A good rule of thumb? Don't watch anything on television or on the internet or participate in any mode of entertainment that you don't want to experience. Not only before bed, but ever. Kaleidoscope eyes. Entranced in trance. For years I've been thinking about how we're all constantly programmed into self-limiting beliefs. That is, believing that we need something outside of us to change how we feel inside of us. That is, after all, what advertising is all about. The never-ending dependence on and consumption of external sources to make us feel happy or better. This belief, which reminds us of our separation from wholeness, is incessantly ingrained in us through the media, television shows, commercials, the news, video games, websites, and sometimes even music. It's a simple strategy, really. If you can suspend people in the feelings of lack, fear, anger, opposition, prejudice, pain, sadness, and anxiety, they remain dependent on someone or something outside of them to make those feelings go away. If you remain in a perpetual state of busyness and are always preoccupied in survival emotions, you never actually have the opportunity to believe in yourself. But what if it was possible to undo or reverse that programming so you had unlimited beliefs about yourself and your life? That's exactly what we've been doing for several years at our advanced workshops, using two simple tools, including one that children have been playing with for ages, a kaleidoscope. The only difference is that we're applying it in a technologically advanced way to induce trance. Up until this point, we've been moving into trance in alpha and theta brainwave states with our eyes closed during meditation. But if we can create alpha and even theta brainwave states with our eyes open, and intentionally expose ourselves to information relevant to our life's dreams and goals, we can reprogram ourselves into supernatural states, rather than the unconscious states we experience daily. But why the kaleidoscope? For many years now, my primary passion has been the mystical. Each time I have one of these profound and super lucid experiences, they create lasting changes within me that deepen my understanding of myself and my connection to the mystery of life. Once you have a mystical experience and get your first glance behind the veil, you can never go back to business as usual, And with every subsequent mystical experience you have, you move closer to source, wholeness, oneness, and the indivisible unified field. The good news is that mystical experiences are no longer relegated to people like Teresa of Avila, Francis of Assisi, or a Buddhist monk who's been meditating for 40 years. Every person is capable of engaging, experiencing, and accessing the mystical. When I'm having a mystical experience, it seems more real to me than anything I've ever known in my life, and I lose track of space and time. Often, just before I become entwined in it, I see in my mind, and sometimes in my outer world, circular, geometric patterns made of light and energy,